is this visual real fall.
I tried to help the doctor with one 14-year-old girl who had become mad, starvation mad. And I was able to calm her somehow and make life possible in that sick bay. So the German, very nice elderly lady doctor, she was Jewish, she came from Hungary, she was not German, she was Hungarian. She kept me there, and every time the German wardens came near, I had to cough and pretend to be terribly ill, so I could remain in that sick bay and not go back to work. And there again, warden, her name was Dorley, whom that young chap of the who had told me that she was a nice and helpful girl, she made friends with me and told me why she was a warden in such a camp. Because she was forced into that work, otherwise they would have sent her very old father out to the front as a soldier. And because she volunteered to take care of prisoners in a labor camp, her father did not have to go to the front. Now, one must never forget, I don't want to take the side of the Germans, there's no reason for me, but one must not forget the pressure on the Germans as well. And she told me quite a lot about it, about their life and how they were pressurized. And she used to come and sit on my so-called bed. I had a paper bag with straw to lie on as a mattress. And as I had terrible sweatings, I had very high fever from that pneumonia, that was usually wet through and dried then at the period when I dried off. So it wasn't a very pleasant place to be in, but she used to sit there and talk of her life before, but we never talked about what she had to do or anything about Nazis. One would not be allowed to do that. Then Christmas came, and the 18-year-old Marion, the head of our place there, the German girl who was in charge of the whole camp there, she wanted a Christmas wreath, an Advent wreath. She brought in fir branches and fir cones and asked who of us could make such a wreath. And I volunteered because I had seen the gardener in our Corinthian place make these wreaths. So I volunteered because I wanted to get the fresh air of the smell of the fir branches, of the spruce. And I made such a wreath, but she did not approve of it. It wasn't neat and hard enough. And so she was very angry with me. But she did not smack me. She just never talked to me again and yelled when she left. That's nothing, and throw it away. So that was not very successful. And from that time on, she ignored me, and I tried to keep out of her way completely. I had very little to do with her. She was a lesbian. She was both. And she forced two very nice young women to have sex with her. But all these things happened, and one took them and didn't listen to it and shut one's eyes, and this is just what went on. And in the sick bay, I was then put into a bigger sick bay, and there I met people from various German communities and histories of life. There was a prostitute from Hamburg, who was the kindest, the most helpful of anybody I ever met there. told us about her life in Hamburg. What kept going by, I kept going by listening to the stories of people I had never met in my life, and it opened my eyes to other another world. And then one day in March, must have been March, I saw them from the east to the west, transports going on the horizon out of my dormitory window. They were cartloads full and people with knapsacks and bundles. And I thought, well, what is happening? Why are they all going back from the east to the west? And that was the first inkling we had that something was going wrong with the war effort. And then the German foreman brought in newspapers, which the girls from my dormitory brought, as I could speak German and not only Polish and Czech. I could read those papers, and I knew geography, because I was older than the others and had learned German geography in my childhood. So I knew what was happening, but I could not figure out how the army had come across. I didn't know of Normandy. I only knew that they were bombing Salzburg, that they were bombing the West cities, Esslingen and Cologne. That I read very little of it, but a little was mentioned. So I knew something was going on. And so the end drew nearer, and the food got worse and worse, but we did get leeks, fresh leeks, which saved us, and then we got raw horse meat in little balls like tartare, and they saved us from terrible diarrhea, because it was a bit of protein. And otherwise we lived for weeks and weeks of soup made of marrow. The marrow and leeks were in the garden of that building, of those buildings there, and we got that. And on Sunday we had freshly boiled potatoes. That was Sunday. So you had a big potato, but no salt, because they had no salt anymore at the end. And that was Sunday dinner. And otherwise we had coffee made of pips and slices of bread, where one of the great problems of a day was, where are you going to eat that slice of bread in the morning and have nothing the whole day? Or are you going to slice that bread into little bits and chew it from the morning to the evening? And there were younger women, 20-year-olds or 18-year-old girls who worked, who used to come to me in the morning and say, Auntie, should I cut my bread this morning into 8 pieces, or should I eat it at once? That were the problems of the day.
What advice did you give?
Well, one day this, one day that. I just, what advice can you give? You could just make them laugh a bit. That was all one could do about it. That was the problem of the day. You talked of recipes, you talked of food. You were terribly hungry. And at night, you had bombs. The Americans bombed at night. The English bombed at daytime. They did not really strike Oderan, but they dropped the bombs flying back from Czechoslovakia. What was left over, they dropped near us. So we had to stand on the staircase so that we could run out when the roof came down. But of course that was quite ridiculous, because the wooden staircase would have burned down immediately. And by that time I had a hernia, And one of my colleagues had made me a rupture belt with a stone and a piece of string. And every time the bombing came nearer, this girl would come in and say, "Rupture belt on," because I had to get up and go out onto that staircase, which I hated because everybody knew we would be bombed on that staircase. The German Marion and her girls, the wardens, they disappeared into a shelter. And the second half of the house, there was another wing of the house, was occupied by French and English prisoners of war. What they did, I cannot tell you. Whether they were let out or kept in like we, I do not know. Only those in the sick bay did not work. The others went on making munition. During the 8 days I was there, I learned to sabotage my wheel. It was an electric wheel where you pushed the ring down onto the cylinder. And if you put two little rings onto it, the whole thing stuck. On the other hand, that happened occasionally because one was nervous. And that stuck, and then you had to wait for the foreman to pull it apart and to reconstruct the thing. That took away half an hour of his time and of our time, so you could do less. That was the normal sabotage we did. There was one young woman in my dormitory who made friends with one of those foremen, and he told her he was going to have a birthday. And so she came to me with a stump of piece of paper and a stump of pencil and said, "Do draw me a birthday card." So I drew a few flowers and wrote the German greeting for a birthday card, and she took it to him, and he asked her who made it, and she told him. And so he sent me a slice of apple and a piece of a cardigan, woolen cardigan, something to get healthy. And he then, later on, we went sort of correspondence through that girl, who told him about me, and she told me about him and his family. And he then sent me the Bible. We were not allowed to read. He sent me his Bible, and I read the Bible. It was forbidden to read, so I had to hide this Bible in my wet mattress. But I had the chance of reading the Old and New Testament during the day, which was very wonderful for me. And I knew that he was in danger. If that Bible was found, something would have happened to him, but he said he didn't mind. And at the end, thank God, I was able to get that Bible back to him. What happened to him, I do not know. I mentioned that because again and again I found helpful people amongst the Jews, amongst the Germans, wherever I went. This is perhaps also one of the reasons why I just am tolerant and cannot be bitter about anything. He had no reason to get himself into any danger, but he helped me. And so then we were let out. There was the bombing going on. Our dormitory had a lot of windows, as I told you before. They cracked and shattered during the night very often. So every morning when they were shattered, the German workmen came from Chemnitz, which was the nearest Saxonian town, and put in new window panes. So when I came here, I was amazed that houses were still blocked up with wooden shutters. Whereas there, we got window panes every morning when the night had broken some of them. And even that very last night, when the Americans were in Chemnitz and the cannonballs came into Oederan, the German men came round and mended our windows. It was something completely amazing. They came at about 6 or 7 in the morning, and at 11 we were evacuated, and we were taken to a train with open coal lorries, wagons, and were forced to get in. I must say that was that transport or the walk from our building to the station, that was one of the very few instances when I was deadly afraid what was going to happen, because they had armed 12 and 14 year old boys with rifles standing along the road we had to walk, so that if anybody tries to escape they would shoot. And I was afraid those boys would be trigger happy. They didn't know who we were, they thought we were criminals. And I must say there I was scared, really scared. And then we all got in into those trucks, squeezed together. There was room for one to sit down, the others had to stand. So we took that in. We were eight, I'm not quite sure whether 6 or 8 days. That is a muddle in my head because it was so awful. You couldn't sleep during all that time. I got hallucinations. I only know now that they were hallucinations. At the time I didn't know about where we were and what was happening. Don't forget, we had nothing to eat. We stood. And we were taken up to over 1,000 meters altitude, the top of the mountains. It was icy cold at night. We had one or two blankets over our heads and ducked together to keep warm. And then you came down into Czechoslovakia, into the spring, and into near Aussig, into what it's called the Eger Graben. It's Cheb in Czech, C-H-E-B in Czech. In German it is Die Eger, and the main town there is Aussig, Usti. And there we were pushed onto a siding, and of course being pushed on a siding meant we crawled out and delivered ourselves, and had nothing to eat. And then from there we had to wait, and I heard on the loudspeaker that they were trying to take us to Bavaria via a place called Fürth am Walde, F-U with little dots, R-T-H, am Walde, in the forest. That was in the Bohemian forest. And from there you could go to Dachau. That I knew, because I knew geography, and I was scared. But before we could leave, the news came through that the Americans had bombed the railway lines, so we could not leave. We could not get there to the frontier, because the railway lines were disrupted. So we went back to some other village, toing and froing. And there, on these railway lines, we met trains, which were astonishing units. They were run and managed by young Nazi boys and girls in uniform. They had buggies with anti-aircraft guns, with machine guns and small artillery. Then there was a wagon for a kitchen, a hospital wagon, and probably sleeping facilities. I was amazed to see these trains sliding to and fro on various lines around us on the sidings or on the main line, and I believe they must have been put on these lines to keep down the Czech population from looting or revolting or shooting any German they could find. It was scaring, but on the other hand, very interesting, because I could not really, I cannot guarantee, this is my idea about it. There was nobody who could give me any explanation. The woman, the warden who was in charge of our train, the 18-year-old Marion, made friends with these young Nazis, and occasionally she brought pots of coffee or soup, and she distributed amongst our 300 Jewish women on this train. That was the only liquid or warm nutrition we got during the week. Otherwise, she and her helps went on into the fields and stole beetroot or any vegetable root and gave it to us, and that was our food for all the days on this train. Of course, unwashed, just as they came. We had no knives or anything to help us with our meals, so we just bit into these soily vegetables. But we stayed alive. We arrived at Theresienstadt, where we ultimately landed fairly healthy, and no corpses in our carriages. From then on, the next transport who returned to Theresienstadt had those dreadful death trains where they first took out the corpses and then the living people came out. But I saw that with my own eyes. But in our train, we were the first train coming back, there were no corpses. When the sun shone, I was quite happy. The air was fresh. Edging the fields and the banks around the railway lines were full of spring flowers, violets, forget-me-nots, daisies, which I hadn't seen for a long time now. And this really was a great experience to see all this spring beauty again. Of course, we were all very sleepy because we stood up in that carriage without being able to, always if one wanted to sit down, the others had to press together so that one could sit down for a while. It was most uncomfortable, and we very often snoozed off standing up because we were so sleepy. That is also a reason why I might have imagined many things. I certainly had sort of images occasionally. The old men with the rifles came up to our wagon and told us none of us could go and run away or escape because they would shoot. I feel quite sure they could never have shot because they were so weak themselves that they could hardly handle their rifles. Nevertheless, occasionally one was weak and scared. On the other hand, one just waited what would happen. We were pushed to and fro. We were then told to go down to Mauthausen. That is a camp, a death camp, near Linz, near the border of Bavaria and Austria, where there were big quarries, granite quarries, where I knew that the prisoners were forced to work in these quarries, and when they were very weak, they were just thrown down from the quarries and left to die. And now when I heard again on the loudspeaker in one of those sidings that we were supposed to go to Mauthausen, again I didn't feel very happy about that. And again bombing started, and the lines blew up just in front of our train. Our warden and these old men and the seven girls who were to help her disappeared and lay flat in the fields, whereas we prisoners had to stay in our carriages and wait what was going to happen. Nothing happened to our train, but I personally saw the lines blowing up, flying up in front of our engine. Again, that was an enormous, dramatic sensation. I suppose I was so weak that I didn't, that I just enjoyed seeing these astonishing, catastrophic sights. I wasn't frightened, I just was amazed at what I saw. Nothing happened to our train. Again and again, it was a miracle. We went down south towards Prague, and then again we were stopped, and the warden was told that the lines between a place called Bauschwitz and Prague were blown up. Now, I knew that Bauschwitz was the station for the Camp Theresienstadt, Theresien, where I had been before I had been sent via Auschwitz to Oederan. So I thought we might go there. Our warden, this 18-year-old Marion, wanted to get rid of us. She and the other girls were scared. They wanted to get back to Germany and didn't know what to do with 300 Jewish women who were in prisoners of war, clothed without a Jewish star. They had taken that away, so we were not handled as Jews, but as prisoners, as criminal prisoners, which makes a great difference. And now when we suggested, she came to ask, what should she do with us? So I and another woman from Theresienstadt suggested she should take the train to Theresienstadt, and that we were sure they would take us back into that cab and she could leave. Now we drew up in Bauschwitz. That was the side. From there the siding went to Theresienstadt. This siding had been built by the Jewish prisoners of Theresienstadt a year before. It had only been just started when I was taken away. She got out there with another woman, another warden, and got a motorbike and rode.